kind of came about as just a thought between myself, Valerie, Leotopic Walker, and Gabriella about what we think our teens are going through right now with social distancing. So many of them have had their daily lines completely interrupted. Actually, all of them have. And many of them have even kind of missed many milestones that many of us have experienced, whether it's graduation or going to prom, or maybe just being able to see their friends on the last day of school. So I'm so grateful to those from Stony Brook University's Healthy Libraries program for joining us today and for presenting their thoughts on what our teens are going through and even sharing resources with us that they feel would be useful for us to have to share with our teens. So thank you so much to Leotopic Walker, Dr. Erica Dimonich, Gabriella Pendelfelli, Evan Marco Gonzalez, Alexander Wilson, and Brittany Fleischer for chatting with us librarians today. And I'm going to now hand it over to Gabriella.
Thank you. So Leah is actually going to begin by introducing herself.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leah Topek Walker, and maybe I actually know some of you. I'm a social worker, and I work at Stony Brook University School of Social Welfare. One of my jobs there, in addition to being a field coordinator, is I coordinate all of the students placed in libraries. So perhaps some of you might have had a social work intern in your library at some point, and if you have, then we might have met or crossed paths because I'm the person who does their supervision and the coordination. I also work on the Healthy Libraries program, and I'm very happy to be here today. Thank you.
And Dr. Dimonich, if you could introduce yourself.
Sure. Hi, good morning, everyone. My name is Erica Dimonich. I'm a clinical psychologist and research assistant professor in the program of public health at Stony Brook. My clinical background is in trauma, mood, and anxiety disorders in adults and teens. And my research is focused on health disparities in Hispanic adults in low-resource communities. And I'm very excited to be part of this important webinar today.
All right, so now the students are going to introduce themselves. My name is Gabriella Pandefelli. I'm currently getting my master's in public health at Stony Brook, and I'm the program coordinator for the Healthy Libraries program.
Hi, good morning, everybody. My name is Evan. I am just finished my first year in the Master's of Social Work program, and I interned at Amityville Public Library and doing remote work for West Babylon Public Library. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brittany. I just finished my first year of the Master's of Social Work program, and I interned at Pat Med Library and Dix Hills.
I'm Alex Wilson. I interned at the Mastic Moriches Shirley Library. I split my time between the Adult Services Department and the Teen Services Department.
All right, and now Leah is going to explain a little bit about what our program is.
Okay, so this year we developed the Stony Brook Medicine Healthy Library Program, which we call HELP, and it's a partnership between the Stony Brook Library Cooperative System, and we're supported by the American Heart Association. This is an interdisciplinary approach, so we have a team of public health, nursing, and social work students. We work together. We provide evidence-based health information, screenings, and also case management. We refer patrons to promote access to appropriate health and social service programs. And we also work with them kind of on addressing whatever barriers are getting in the way of them getting services, answering questions that they may have. It's a great opportunity for our students to experience interprofessional teams. And it's also really been, I think, a very positive experience for the libraries and the patrons to bring some very holistic services. We provide programs, trainings, and resources for the librarians and for the patrons. And so the learning objectives for today, you guys have the slide in front of you, I think, but we're going to talk about the definition of mental health, three warning signs of mental health, of a mental health issue. We're going to talk about the difference between sadness and depression, the definition of major depressive disorder in teens, symptoms of major depressive disorder in teens. We're also going to talk about evidence-based strategies that can support youth and mental health. And we're also going to talk about really fabulous local resources for our teenagers. And hopefully help everyone feel confident in their ability to act as a resource on mental health information for teens and for families. And we definitely want to answer any questions that you have, so you can post questions in the chat, you can raise your hand, you can jump in if something is super burning. Please, you know, if you're going to ask a question, make sure you unmute yourself so we can hear you. And if you are, you can enter a question in the chat or raise your hand. And we will, if we don't answer every question that's in the chat, we will get to it, you know, and we'll get the information to you. Gabrielle, you're muted.
Yeah, so now Dr. Demich is going to be talking about what is mental health.
Hey, hello, good morning. So these are, of course, unprecedented times, I think, not just for teens and adolescents, but for adults, for professionals, and for all of us. What is mental health? Mental health, it's, you know, composed of many things that involve our psychological well-being, our social well-being, our emotional well-being. And clearly there is a big social component to well-being, specifically among adolescents and teenagers. So the, right now, the focus right now, there's a variety of, mental health disorders, but for today, we're really going to focus on depression. So major depression, it's common. We all experience depressed moods at some point in time in our lifetime. It's normal, particularly for teens who are going through a great deal of developmental changes and emotional changes, to experience a wide range of emotions all day. But what I'm going to talk about briefly is just what the distinctions are between, normal feelings, normal emotions, and what we should be looking at when we think about what might be warning signs or concern. So the most common form of depression is major depressive disorder. Depression is, it's very different from sadness. Emotions, as we all know, they're very fleeting. When we're angry, it's short lasting. It's for a few seconds. Something has happened. We're so upset about it. It's the same thing with embarrassment. Sadness is a very, very different emotion. It's actually the longest lasting of all of our basic emotions. We can be sad for several hours and for a few days. When we think about the distinguishing between sadness and depression, the timing is really critically important, because what we're looking at is, are we seeing someone who is demonstrating some signs of sadness that are lasting longer than might be expected, or longer than normal? And longer than normal in this case would be a feeling of sadness or a sense of sadness that's pervasive, that's extending up to, about 14 days. It's a longer feeling. So with mental health disorders, particularly with depression, they can impact a wide range of functioning. And right now, during this pandemic, what's even more challenging is traditionally we might look at signs of depression as becoming problematic when we see behaviors in adolescents and teens, such as failing grades in school or performing differently, perhaps missing out on social activities or social practices, missing school. Right now, it's even more challenging, because how do we gauge these changes when we're in this virtual kind of learning environment? So depression, it is the most common mental health disorder. It affects nearly 1 in 8 adolescents and young adults each year. And Gabrielle, if you could just go to the next slide, please. When we think about, again, what some of the warning signs or some of the things that we need to be concerned about when it comes to depression, it's all about, I often tell parents, caregivers, and educators, it's about frequency, intensity, and duration. There are several symptoms to be diagnosed with depression, and they are on one of the next slides. But before we go over that, it's really, again, it's teenagers and in all of us, right? We're social beings. We're allowed to be emotionally volatile and have feelings of anxiety and fear and depression and angst. But it is about the frequency of those emotions, how long they are lasting, and what exactly they're interfering with, and what behaviors we are deviating from. Okay, so some normal signs for teenagers are, of course, withdrawing from family, wanting to spend more time with friends, wanting privacy, not wanting to perhaps spend as much time with mom and dad or siblings, but wanting to be outside of the house with their friends. During this time of social distancing and pandemic, some signs that might actually be cause for concern would be a teenager or an adolescent, a young child who does not want to engage in any kind of interaction with friends via social media or games, whatever it is that's being set up to keep these virtual relationships. A complete withdrawal from them is okay temporarily, but if this is persisting again, and it's persisting, longer than a week, longer than 12 days, 14 days, then those might be signs for concern. Gabrielle, if you could go to the next slide, please. Okay. So one thing is that, of course, we don't want to, over-pathologize. As I mentioned when I started, these are unprecedented times for everyone. And mental health, different than resilience, right, is not simply about the absence of symptoms or the absence of any kind of pathology. We expect there to be some oscillation, right? We're going to have days when we feel good, days when we feel bad. That's normal. That's healthy. We all exhibit some signs of symptoms across a wide range of psychiatric disorders at some point in time, but it's all about how we bounce back from that. So according to the National Institute of Health, some signs that the NIH will highlight as being indicative of, that a child might need some help would be, again, it's changes in behavior. So we focus on things like temperament. Is my child or is this teenager who I see frequently behaving in a way that's just atypical from how I, typically see this child, this teen? For those who are, parents, it's, are sleeping patterns different now? And not only are they different, but do those seem to, again, be persistent? Because, of course, sleeping patterns have changed drastically given remote learning and differences in schedules. A teen or a child right now, loss is more than just about loss of actual death of a family member or a friend. There are many teenagers and many children who right now are grieving the loss of important milestone events for them, grieving the loss of not seeing friends, not interacting. So when we think about grief during COVID, I think that we need to think about grief as being more broad reaching right now. And it's not simply about the actual loss of a family member or loved one, but it's the loss of many of the norms of our day-to-day lives. And we need to validate that experience for teens and for teenagers alike and be as supportive as possible. Let's see, so some common warning signs would typically be alcohol, abuse, again, changes in habits. Right now, some of those things I would think that, some of those things might change in the sense that everyone's at home right now, or at least temporarily for a bit longer. So it really is, I think, paying attention to the behavioral changes and the differences that we're seeing, and that can be the most informative. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so COVID-19 has changed our lives, and it seems to be based on what the Department of Education is saying, that it's going to be a change that we're going to have to brace our teens and children for going into the future and into the next academic year. What are some of the immediate things that we can do that can help mitigate this harm? Is that in addition to just monitoring and paying attention to changes in behavior and possible signs of depression, we need to validate, validate the frustration that many young adults are feeling. We need to, help teens and children understand that it's okay to have these feelings, but what can we do to now persevere? And how do we modify? How do we develop a new plan going forward? Some of that might be setting up or helping our kids, depending on the age or the developmental stage that they're at, setting up virtual play dates, setting up virtual gatherings with friends, encouraging and explaining to teenagers, particularly who sometimes feel invincible, that social distancing, it is important. We still do not quite understand how this virus works. And although our teens might feel invincible, it's explaining to them that the social distancing, it's important for the people that they love. So it's also important, again, to acknowledge that losing spaces such as our school, our libraries, which are indeed safe havens for many teenagers and many children, how do we instill hope that we will get through this while also keeping our children happy and well-adjusted? And that is through communicating, right? Listening, observing, and offering solutions and tips and working together with children. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so as I mentioned, there is a big, huge difference between feeling sad and clinical depression. Again, as I started with, sadness is qualitatively different. We can expect that you might feel sad for a couple of days. It is not the norm to feel sad for 2 weeks or longer. And that would usually be followed by signs across a host of other symptoms, change in appetite, change in sleeping patterns, irritability. When we see those behaviors together, those are indicative of that there may be an underlying problem that does need to be addressed. So again, when we think about signs for major depressive disorder, particularly within children and adolescents, it is frequency, intensity, and duration. Am I observing these changes, and have these changes been present for 14 days or longer? Next slide, please. Okay, some symptoms to look for if you think that a teenager is depressed, and these as well, although at different stages, also apply to younger children. So with younger children, it might be an increase in physical symptoms. My tummy hurts, where with teenagers, it's typically more of irritability and mood changes that we see. Social withdrawal. With younger children, it really could be that, none of us are used to these Zoom meetings. The experience for children as well, it's very, very different and can induce social anxiety, even during this time of the social pandemic. And one suggestion that I've offered parents with younger children is, help them to kind of break through the nervousness of engaging virtually, which is an odd experience. It's not the same. By practicing with grandparents, practicing with family members, and once children, younger ones, start to feel comfortable with that, they can become uncomfortable with things like virtual play dates. The social connection piece is incredibly, incredibly important. Children and adolescents are remarkably resilient, but we need to do all that we can to support them so that we can enhance those innate resilient qualities that are there. With academic decline right now during the pandemic, it's incredibly different because children are all being educated virtually and remotely, but via very, very different resources. So right now it's encouraging communication. So if we start to see perhaps for as much as it's possible, if you have a sense of what assignments are being given, or if there's a metric of performance, it's as parents, as educators, it's really paying attention to those and looking for changes in students' performance that is not typical. Self-criticism, if it's a child, again, and you know, adolescents are prone to a lot of negative self-statements, oh, I'm so stupid, or you know, I'm just so ugly. That can be a norm, but when that is also in concert with some other factors, such as persistent sadness, persistent mood changes, persistent behavior changes, that can be a very important warning sign. So screening and treatment are, of course, available. There are several resources that have recently come out from the CDC, from the American Psychological Association, offering wonderful remote telehealth services via Facebook, via several other links, and I'm sure someone else in the talk will go over that. But the most important piece is that if there are symptoms that are persistent for 2 weeks or longer, and there are several, so it's not simply one, but there are several symptoms of, you know, mood change in sleeping, change in irritability, that is a time that if a pediatrician is an available resource, to reach out to a pediatrician for a referral, because we do know that although depression is common, it's important, particularly with young children and with teenagers, to have treatment initiated as soon as possible. Okay. Gabriella, next slide. Yeah. Okay. So some recommendations to support emotional well-being. It's recommended, right, that librarians provide age-appropriate information. And what might that age-appropriate information be? It varies. And I think that we want to be careful with that, because we also want to know and understand that what applies for one 10-year-old does not mean that it's going to apply for all 10-year-olds. And it's the same for teenagers. There is not a blanket approach. I think it's understanding the child or the young adult that the referral or the information is being given to. So have information prior hand about the individual you are trying to help, so that the help that is being extended is most appropriate. Adults should allow children and teens to ask questions using reliable resources. In this day of social media, we don't want our, you know, teenagers getting their information from, you know, the Daily Mail. We want, or Twitter, you know, we want there to be reliable sources of information. So it's providing that, and that can be really informative, having lists ready and saying, look at these sites if you have questions. And we have two sites listed here, two great Stony Brook sites and another WHO site. And you want to ensure, again, that, you know, conversations, you know, teenagers, children are astute. And if information is given in a way that's authentic and sincere, there will be a good response to it. It's important that teenagers and children feel that they are heard, that they are validated, and that they are supported. And above all, we have to remember, we need to be patient. This is an incredibly challenging time for all of us, particularly for our young adults. And social distancing. Oh. Thanks, Gabriella. So social distancing, as I'd mentioned before, I briefly outlined some suggestions. Again, for younger children, it's encourage virtual games with friends. For older teens, do encourage social interaction via whatever platform teenagers were using or are using now. Okay, next slide. And I think that's it for me.
I'll be going over the next few slides just to talk about some tips and some ideas to help teens during COVID-19. So some general tips are to maintain a daily routine, encourage parents and teens to have a consistent sleep routine, consistent activity, consistent study patterns. Routines are really important. Encourage teens to stay connected with others. Encouraging talking and feeling comfortable about feelings and worrying. Limiting the amount of time that teens are spending watching the news or social media, because that can be stressful. And also making sure to be kind to each other and working through this together. Although we're socially distant, we're still connected. So there are a few ways to cope with changes from COVID-19, as teens will be going through a lot of physical, emotional changes, and it may be harder for them to handle anxiety associated with hearing and reading the news of COVID-19. So kind of limiting news, we don't want to be looking at that 24/7 all day. Older teens may deny reactions to themselves and to others. They may say that they're okay, even though they're upset. They might complain about some physical minor pain like headaches, but what may be really bothering them is emotional stress. So we want to really support teens and have an open and honest conversation with them. Let them know that you care about them in a non-intrusive way and encourage them to stay in touch with friends and family via texting, using your cell phone, video chatting, video games. There's even games you could play on your cell phone through text messaging, and encouraging discussion of the outbreak experience with peers and families. We also want to make sure that we discuss and address stigma, prejudice, potential injustices that could be occurring during the outbreak. And we just want to have an open and honest conversation with teens on any questions they may ask during this time. So there's some virtual programming ideas, and I found these from the Colorado Department of Education. So some ideas for virtual programming during COVID-19 could be Skype a librarian, which would set hours for patrons to Skype librarians for help with technology, maybe questions about ebooks, their library cards, or maybe they're just looking for some personal interaction. You could also start an online study group for high school students, help them learn how to find sources, find credible information, and do research online. This might be helpful during school now. It's virtual, so they might be missing that kind of one-on-one time with teachers. And this might be a way to kind of supplement that and also get teens interactive and being social. Another idea was to create a kind of pandemic book club, read books like Station 11 and Severance, and discuss them. You could also live stream your hobby, such as knitting, painting, or embroidery, and doing a library craft hour. You could also set up a chat with tweens and teens to talk about current events. Maybe teens could bring a story, a news article, and you could discuss the article, kind of sources of bias, whether or not it's reliable, and kind of go over news topics with them. This way, you can discuss the news, but kind of in an open and honest way, and maybe discuss some anxieties that teens are having about current events. There's also this idea for digital escape rooms, which how to create them are linked here, and you'll be getting the slides when the presentation's over. So this is kind of like in-person escape rooms, but you can create them digitally, which could be a fun interactive event for library patrons. And then additional ideas for virtual programming can be found linked at the bottom, which our Google Docs from the Colorado Department of Education. So now I'm gonna pass it on to Evan, and he's gonna be talking about resources for librarians to share with their patrons and families.
Thank you, Gabriella. Hello, everyone. So I'm Evan. I'll be talking about different places of reference for issues and places that we may not be familiar with. There's a lot of help out there, and it can seem a little bit overwhelming, so I hope you'll find these slides helpful. So coping with everything that is going on in this world has been difficult for all of us. Taking into account young people, their critical thinking skills are not fully developed. The doctor talked about some of the feelings of invincibility. Sometimes cultivating long-term consequential thinking skills is crucial to making better decisions, better informed decisions, and utilizing positive coping skills. For young people, reaching out or being referred to mental health and substance use resources can help in managing their well-being in this confusing and very stressful time. Suffolk County provides a directory of behavioral health services every year, and 2020's guide can be found at this link. the link listed on top. Some of the kinds of resources that you'll find are mental health clinics and substance use treatment providers, care coordination, housing specifically aimed for people in treatment to help support their healthy recovery, prevention services, and also hotline numbers for anybody to just sort of reach out, you know, and talk to somebody for help. Next slide. Kidshealth.org is another great place to find advice on children's health, behavior, and growth, focusing on education, physical, and emotional well-being. This site provides helpful information to parents, children, and teens. Families Together in New York State is a family-run organization that represents families of children with social, emotional, and behavioral issues. With peer support, advocacy, assistance, training, and education, they aim to empower our young people to build their resilience in this post-COVID world. And also for young people that struggle with mental health, substance use is something that comes hand in hand with mental health sometimes. And for young people looking for self-help groups, there are two related but different organizations in Alcoholics Anonymous and Alateen, which can be a helpful refuge for those impacted by addiction. Alcoholics Anonymous, or AA, is an international fellowship of people struggling with addiction. Started in 1939, it's a non-professional, self-supporting program known to help for over eight decades, with anonymity being one of its core traditions. The program is also rooted in a belief of a spiritual power for spiritual guidance, in a higher power. Al-Anon is similar in that it is based on the same program model as AA, but instead focuses on self-help for those affected by friends and family members living with addictions in any capacity. Alateen falls under that umbrella and is targeted for teens. So just to clarify, it's not a group that focuses on how to care for people with addictions, but rather it focuses on their own well-beings from the toll that it takes to love and care for someone that is dependent on substances. There are Zoom meetings arranged for both types of groups. You can find them by emailing the Alateen coordinator at the email address listed and longislandinterventions.com website as well. And the Yale program in addiction medicine is a research program that assists in expanding access and improvement in prevention and treatment services for substance use. Their website provides a substantial amount of COVID-19 guidance for young people currently engaged in treatment, including information on triggers and relapse, how to maintain access to current medications like methadone or other medication-assisted treatments, counseling, meetings, and other helpful pieces of information. Smart Recovery is another kind of self-help program that offers groups where teens can get together to look into and change behaviors that are hurting themselves and others. This program is non-12-step based, meaning there is no emphasis on a higher being, but is rather grounded in evidence-based practices by trained group facilitators. Probably many of your own libraries may have had a Stony Brook intern run one of these groups at your own libraries. The Friends of New York, Friends of Recovery New York, they'll actually be hosting weekly virtual check-in calls. The first of the three sessions is starting this Friday, May 29th, and I think that they continue for the next next couple of Fridays, June 5th and June 12th. So it's they help, if anybody wants to ask any questions, this would be a great place to go, and you can check out the website for more information there. And another invaluable resource is DASH. So DASH, they provide a hotline for immediate crisis assistance. Facing mental health or addiction issues can be overwhelming, especially combined with the stress associated with the COVID-19 virus. In this time of uncertainty, adults and children may be feeling the pressure, which often manifests itself into forms of extreme anxiety, depression, feelings of isolation, and much more. Family Service League's unique care center is a beacon of hope for Suffolk County children and adults who are struggling who are struggling to cope. They are there 24 hours, 7 days a week, located in Hauppauge, and they have just a myriad of different providers there willing to help and assess. The Trevor Project provides a bunch of information and resources on LGBTQ youth related to sexual orientation, gender identity, suicide prevention, and much, much more. Counselors can also be contacted via phone, chat, or text, so it makes it very flexible to try to get in contact with somebody. The Response Crisis Hotline is another resource for people in crisis and in need of immediate support and needing to talk to somebody immediately. Conexión also provides the same resources for those in need of Spanish counselors. The Teen Line is a peer advocacy network that provides access to trained teen volunteer supports and other resources that teens face during these difficult times. And Youthline is another valuable resource that provides guidance on how to get through daily issues that come up due to the pandemic, information on facts and clarifying rumors with guidelines from the CDC and WHO. And lastly, here is contact information for the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. And they also provide assistance in Spanish for those that prefer as well. Many people believe that talking about suicide will make them want to go through with their thoughts, but the research suggests otherwise. Therefore, it is critical to get people that have these kinds of thoughts to get them to somebody who can help process. So now I'm going to pass it over to Alex, who's going to talk about his internship experience. Thank you, everybody, for your time. Alex?
Thank you, Evan. Appreciate it. I said before, I internship at the Mastic Mariches Shirley Community Library. I split my time between the adult services and the teen services. In teen services, I was there 2 days, one for a game on program, which was existing, where the kids played video games, and another on Wednesdays, I ran a Let's Talk program. And in Let's Talk, I basically covered a variety of topics. And how I started it was that I basically gave each teen that was interested in participating a questionnaire. And they were just a wide variety of questions, you know, some more in-depth questions, some lighter questions. And with the questions, it basically asked like what they found interesting, what they didn't find interesting, topics they want to learn more about, and things like that. And then I took all of their answers and I compiled them into different categories of different topics that I would talk about. And it was funny because later on in the, a couple months later, the teens were like, oh, these are based on the things that we wrote about on the first time that we ever had a Let's Talk program. So that was really very, very cool that they kind of like, they were picking the topics and I was kind of gearing them towards topics that dealt with their mental health and dealt with their development as teens. Some of the topics include nutrition, proper sleeping and study habits. I think the one that they enjoyed the most was pretty much about substance abuse. And what was interesting is that when I started one topic and then they asked me, can I do another one, which I hadn't thought about. And then I did that one. And then it went from marijuana to vaping to alcohol use. And it was topics that they wanted to know about because they wanted to know how these substances affect them and why it's so important that they don't use these things, even though they see their friends using these things. I found that having them fill up that questionnaire made it work. Because I was picking topics, not just at random, I was picking topics that they kind of chose. Another thing that I kind of do is like, I broke it up into like, sometimes they weren't really slideshows, but they were like either videos or information. So half the time I would, you know, give them instruction on information on the topic and the facts, and then we'd have a discussion. And they really enjoyed that because they were given a chance to ask questions A lot of the teens on the different topics, they only knew the information that their parents told them. They were never able to ask questions or really dive into a topic. And I figured out that a lot felt that their opinions never mattered. And so this was a space where they basically were able to describe their opinions and their thoughts on a topic after learning like the actual facts of the topic, which I they really enjoyed because they felt that they could really participate. And that's really what it was about. It was giving them the correct information and then giving them the time to discuss it with me as the intern and really with all the other all the other teams. Now, when the library closed, this became harder, but actually in the Massachusetts Merchants Shirley Community Library, the Let's Talk program in the teen department was one of the first ones that went virtual. We didn't have as many participants, but it was still an avenue where the kids can discuss topics. And really what I liked about the Zoom is that you can break up into a small, like a separate side group. And like one of the teens brought up a topic that she wanted to discuss with me privately. So you had the opportunity to do that because you could break. It's like the same thing as if that teen had said to me at the library, hey, can I talk to you on the side for a second? It's the same thing. You know, they're getting their needs met by talking with somebody. So that's what I really liked about the virtual sessions. You know, like I said, there wasn't as many participants, but the ones who did participate really seemed to get something out of it. And those, that was really kind of my experiences with, you know, the teens and doing groups.
All right, now we're going to pass it on to Brittany and she's going to talk about her experience.
All right. Hello. I guess before the libraries had to close, we had started a teen mental health awareness program that the teens really liked at that library. So we decided to move that onto Zoom. And the way that we found that that worked best is we would give the teens, that was probably like 10 to 15 each week, give them the first 10 minutes. They went around to the group and they kind of shared what they had been doing each week to make the time more enjoyable, what activities they've been doing. And then I would kind of share for about 10 minutes about a different topic. So we kind of discussed anxiety and ways that we can cope with that, stress management, maybe depressive symptoms. We tried to identify who we could go to if we felt like maybe we were going through something. Most of them identified their parents. And what to do if we feel like maybe a friend is hurting right now. And we found that this really worked, and we had a lot of students come when we did little Jackbox sessions at the end, which is a game that really helped a lot with socialization. They really enjoyed that. So it was kind of a fun little getaway program in the middle of the day where they can just talk to their friends that maybe they wouldn't talk to on a normal basis, like out of their social group, which was really nice. And I think it was a lot of fun. So that's what I have.
Okay, so I'm just gonna briefly summarize what we've talked about, and if there's any questions, you guys can post them in the chat or raise your hand or just talk over me, you know, so we can get everything answered. But so basically, we have discussed and reviewed mental health during COVID-19, how staying at home might affect mental health, common mental health warning signs that we may see in teens who are experiencing mental health disorders, the difference between sadness and depression, common symptoms of major depressive disorder, strategies for supporting teen mental health during COVID-19, some ideas for library programming, which I'm sure you guys also probably have a bunch of ideas. I know in my library, my teen actually uses the teen library programming because he does enjoy it and really wants that social interaction. So I'm sure you guys probably already have a bunch of ideas, but maybe we've given you some more. Resources for mental health support and virtual support groups for teens. So are there any questions right now that we can answer for you guys, or just ideas or things that you would like to bring up? So how do we contact Stony Brook Healthy Libraries program? You can email us at the email address listed. And I believe you guys are going to get a copy of the slide deck. And so you'll have all this information, you know, right there. And if for some reason you cannot find it, you can always, I'll just offer you Derek without even asking you, but I'm sure you can email Derek and he can pass on our contact information as well. Thank you.
Yeah, so this is our email, healthy_libraries_program@stonybrookmedicine.edu. I'm also the program coordinator, and you could always email me. I sent you guys out a group email, a mass email for those who registered to fill out the pre-webinar survey. So you might have my email already. It's gabriella.pandefelli@stonybrook.edu. And if you could, we also want everyone to fill out a post-webinar survey. I'm going to send the link to everyone now. This is kind of just how you felt the webinar went, any topics you would like us to do webinars in the future, anything you think we missed. If you could just fill this out for us, it's anonymous and it'll just really help us in the future. And if there's any ideas you have for future webinar topics that you're interested in or you think that your library patrons would be interested in, there is a section for that down below, and that would definitely be helpful.
Any other questions that we can answer for you? I'm not on mute anymore.
Okay. I'm going to have to let Paco go, okay?
Well, guys, so.
And yeah, we'll be sending the slide deck out, the video recording, and we're also going to create a list of mental health resources for teens, and we're going to probably send that out to you in the next day or two so that you all have this information.